Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Hey, you've done some great documentaries, and your book work has been fantastic. How did you get involved in this angle? How did this all start for you?
I did a doctorate, and you know, if you do postgraduate study, you have to find some kind of original angle. And I could see that there has been loads and loads of academic work and journalistic work criticizing the news media, mm-hmm. And sort of seeing, you know, who are the power players behind the news media. But really very little had been written about Hollywood, about the entertainment industry. And the stuff that was written about Hollywood was quite kind of, it's kind of rooted in academia and sort of, literary studies, film studies, those kind of things, not very politicized, and no one was really terribly interested in the production processes. Like, you know, does the government get involved in making films? You know, there was just nothing out there about that. So I decided to take that on as a kind of, instead of looking at news media and sort of overall political discourse, I thought it'd be interesting to hone in on the entertainment side of it. And it was immediately obvious that there was loads going on there that had just been neglected horribly by academia and to a large extent by journalists as well. So I realized that there was a really rich avenue there. And it's been weird, actually. I mean, I've been researching this now for whatever it is, like 15 years, and I'm still really interested.
Long time.
I mean, I do sometimes take a bit of a break away from it to, you know, to sort of recharge and do something a bit different. But it is a really interesting area, this intersection between the entertainment industry and propaganda, really. I don't really like you to use the word propaganda because I think it's loaded with all sorts of different sort of meaning.
You think of Goebbels and the Nazis when you hear propaganda, but
exactly, it's not very useful. And people toss it around quite dangerously, in the same way that you know, with Brexit, for example, people tossed around the word democracy. It's incredibly dangerous because democracy is not just it can seem like it's just, you know, a bunch of people voting for one thing at one time and saying, okay, that's the end of it. But that's how we got into the problem with Britain leaving the EU. Whereas democracy is about lots of other things as well, about accountability and about transparency of government and all those kind of things. In the same way that, you know, propaganda is not just about someone telling a lie. It's about systematic deception over time by powerful institutions for specific ideological ends, etc., etc. So I try to avoid the word a little bit, but sometimes it's useful as a short.
Sometimes you have to. And with propaganda, Matthew, comes really not only the entity that wants to do the propaganda, but you have the entity that will fall for it and use it. And it sounds like that's what Hollywood's been doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, Hollywood is susceptible to state influence. And a lot of that is to do with the fact that they want to save a bit of money. And they want to have good relationships with the government. And so, you know, why not? What harm does it do them to cooperate with the government? Particularly as there's not much of a fuss made about it, because no one really knows much about it. It's just a sort of industry inside, set of relationships where producers allow the government to come in, take a look at scripts and change scripts in exchange for providing helicopters and aircraft carriers and advice. And
submarines and everything else. Interesting. Explain to us, Matthew, how technically it would work. Who approaches who first, and how does this mechanism begin?
Well, in theory, what should happen is that a film producer should go along to the Pentagon and sometimes the CIA and say, we want some help on this. Please, can you assist us to make this film more accurate on this script? We want to make sure that the language is correct, for example, like we use military language properly. And then the Pentagon should come in, advise on that, and then provide huge bits of kit that the filmmakers request. And they should provide that for, the filmmakers should still pay for that, albeit at a reduced cost. But actually what happens in practice is, well, one of the things is that actually sometimes those costs are rather fiddled in a way that I hesitate to call corruption, but in a way that is not necessarily accepted all around by everyone writing about it. but the main thing is that the depth and breadth of the script changes that are required by the Pentagon are so much greater than anyone actually knows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really serious problem because it means that they're changing history, changing representation of American foreign policy, American power, all the time. So, for example, they have showstoppers, which means basically, you know, things that they just simply will not allow to be in a film if they're going to be working on it. And they're things like, you know, you're not allowed to show that that you've lost a nuclear weapon. You're not allowed to show racism in the military, for example. You're not allowed to show the military's inability to deal with issues of sexual assault. Anything to do with torture, coups, illegal arms sales, assassinations, weapons of mass destruction, war crimes, anything like that, all has to go. And they've tied the producers into contracts on every individual film and TV show that on which this relates. So, you know, they're able to exercise a considerable degree of authority, a little bit like you could perhaps see them as the institution, the political institution, as a as another producer,
mm-hmm.
a sort of hidden executive producer, which is also happens to be extremely active in terms of shaping.
Would there be a division within the Pentagon somewhere that has a staff that does just this?
Yeah, that's exactly it. There is the Entertainment Liaison Office in the Department of Defense, which is in charge of this and has been doing this for many, many decades, but just very much under the radar, and has received occasionally little pieces of criticism, but very limited, just in the sort of in the newspapers, it kind of pops up sort of very infrequently. They have a staff and they supposedly wait for these film producers to come to them. But again, there's a lot of that sort of narrative, that kind of benign narrative of what the Pentagon does, is not really the case. Because actually, as we've found from a lot of new documentation over the past 5 years or so, oftentimes they're going out to Comic-Con and lots of other conferences, and they're arranging meetings, and they're being actually very proactive in the industry to foster relationships. And that's particularly the case with the CIA as well, which is a sort of junior player in this. The Pentagon does much more. But the CIA is very much able to get in very early on film scripts so that it can persuade, rather than providing a great deal of materiel, it gets in very early to... funnily enough, actually, just last night, I was on British TV. There's only a few channels on British TV, unless you've got a decent telly, which I don't. But I was just, you know, literally just flicking over. There was Kingsman on one channel, and then the next channel I turned over to, it was Mission Impossible, the first one. You know, these are both CIA... Kingsman is an MI5 assisted project, and Mission Impossible was... right from the outset in the Tom Cruise films, was a CIA-assisted project.
There was a movie... Go ahead, Matt.
Sorry, I was just going to say, it's not always clear the extent to which there is script interference, particularly from the CIA, because they're much more careful with their... Well, not careful, maybe that's the wrong word, but they're more secretive, really, with their paperwork, and they like to do things informally, by telephone, for example. But, you know, it's pretty clear from... dribs and drabs that have come out, for example, through leaked documentation through a court case about the Al Pacino film The Recruit, that the CIA does sometimes exercise considerable influence, literally sort of writes rough drafts of scripts in certain cases.
There was a movie in 1995 called Crimson Tide that starred Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington.
Yes.
And they were upon a Navy submarine. Hackman was the commanding officer. Denzel was the executive officer. And there was the whole movie revolved around questioning Gene Hackman's ability because they lost the message on whether to launch or not against the Soviets at the time. But I would guess, because there was a submarine involved and they did a lot of filming inside of a sub, they had to get cooperation from the Navy and the Pentagon, right?
Well, that's mostly right. I can't remember exactly the extent to which they had influence over Crimson Tide. I think there was actually a problem, as I recall, with giving full cooperation. So what the Pentagon has is a series of different levels of cooperation that they provide. Full cooperation basically means that you're looking at a really heavily... basically an advert for the military in one way or another. And they are very common. So films like Pearl Harbor, which was on the night before on my television, is, full cooperation. Crimson Tide, I think, may have only been courtesy cooperation or limited cooperation. And that's because of exactly the thing that you picked up on, which is that there's this mutiny on a ship, and they don't like showing.
They don't like that stuff. Yeah.
That said, they exercise caution about that and sort of their own judgment. So films like A Few Good Men, they provided limited cooperation, but I think that if they were to do that again, if a similar script came in today, I think they would, from what I can tell, from what they've mentioned in interviews and things, that they would probably go for a script like that now because it shows that the system does actually work. So Jack Nicholson's character at the end is actually brought to justice. So that they would have been probably a bit keener on that now. Same thing with something like Courage Under Fire, which was the Meg Ryan movie, where they provided limited cooperation for a film set in Iraq. Again, about kind of mutiny and, problems in the ranks. But generally speaking, they still are able to some extent to shape those scripts, because even if they don't provide full cooperation, even if the relationship isn't 100% tight, they're still able to exercise influence and advice over early stages of the drafting process. So, if a good example would be something like Independence Day, which we've actually only found this out in the past few months because we've been making a film, a documentary film to go along with this. And as part of that, Roger Stahl from the US, a professor over there, has done a huge research project of his own, sort of building on what myself and Tom Secker did. And one of the things he found was that in the case of Independence Day, which that ultimately negotiations fell through, partly because they wanted to represent aliens in Roswell and all this kind of thing. But one of the things Roger found out from documentation unearthed recently is that they, you know, in the scenes where they blow up the White House and
I think they
blow up NORAD and all that. Yes, well, there was another scene that they wanted to film there, which was to blow up the Pentagon. But they, even though there was ultimately no contract signed between the Pentagon
and the movie
the
people,
filmmakers, they were still able to get that to be removed, as well as many other changes.
I've always wondered if stories of UFOs, movies of UFOs, are leaked Pentagon information that we knew about as a government to producers like Steven Spielberg and people like that, and simply said, look, we're being visited, go ahead and do Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or something like that. Is that possible?
Well, yeah, that's something that myself and another colleague, Robbie Graham, looked into. I don't know if you...
He's a UFO... He's a UFO researcher, isn't he?
Yeah, and he wrote a book. He sort of wrote the book on the relationship between cinema and UFOs, which is called Silver Screen Sources, which I very much recommend. And he and I wrote one of the very few peer-reviewed academic articles about... the relationship between the media and UFOs. This was a few years ago now, but we're meant to be doing a thing. COVID interferes with so many things, but that was one of the... we're meant to be doing something a couple of days ago for the Anomalist website, where Robbie and I were going to work together again and talk about this, but I think it will be delayed for a couple of weeks. But yes, there are cases where... the government has seeded information into films or into documentaries. One of the interesting things about Close Encounters, actually, was it was kind of the opposite of that. That I think, at least from the documentation that we have, which is obviously limited, it seems that NASA actually wanted to prevent that film from coming out. There was Spielberg himself in this obscure interview from 1977, which I had to file about 50 different library request to actually find the original quote to check that it was legitimate. But he said that he received a 20-page letter from NASA in the run-up to the release of Close Encounters saying, we don't want this to be released because we're worried that after what happened with everyone panicking about sharks following the release of Jaws a couple of years prior, we don't want the same thing happening again and having these enormous number of reports coming in from people seeing things in the skies.
And look what's happening now with the Pentagon releasing some videos of UFOs being chased by fighter pilots.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a reason they're doing that.
I think it's really, really interesting. And, yeah, of course there's a reason for it. I feel that that's something that I, whenever things like that happen, I go to Robbie Graham. and hopefully when we do the our own podcast together on the Anomalist in a week or two, then he'll talk further about that. But yeah, I completely agree with you. It's absolutely fascinating.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halper. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.